Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to...
It's like you're a defensive tackle, and you're calling out my cadence. You know my snap count. Got to change it up a little bit. Got to use a hard count.
I was already in the backfield before you even started.
I feel like this should just be the intro to the show. Part of me wants to just keep rolling at this point. I mean, let's do it. This is part of the fun of the show here. I'll let Jackson stitch us together on the back end. This is the Smiley Show. We're off to a very adventurous and fun start here. I'm Charlie Hume. He's Smiley Kaufman. As you can tell via that conversation, we have NFL football on the mind. A lot of great games today. We're recording on a Sunday night. Yep. How about that snow game in Philly?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of crazy. The one rule I didn't realize is that you couldn't move snow with anybody other than the people that are on the field. So he had like all these offensive linemen trying to like move snow. So the kicker, I think it was Jake Elliott's their kicker, like had a place to like plant his foot. I didn't know that rule, but it was funny watching just grown men, you know, just look like dogs out there trying to basically get the ground clear.
Doggy paddling. Yeah. He missed that first extra point, and then he was just hitting low stingers, just hitting the 2-iron off the tee. Hit rockets low because you cannot let that thing get up in the air. Let the snow impact it. And the Lions got boat raced. A lot of intrigue, man. We got the Bills Ravens game on as we speak. Curious who comes out of each of those conferences. But that's our football piece. We're of course here to talk to you about golf. Although I have to get one more thing in the notes. We had a very short lived national emergency today. The dark TikTok went dark. And then it just came after about 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. So turns out I had an addiction, by the way.
So I also found that out today. Good to be back.
Don't have TikTok and Instagram on my apps to where, like, if you were scrolling my phone and looking for it, you couldn't find it. So I have a search bar. And this is like when I was off of social media for years. You know, I had, you know, those apps off. To where the only way I could get to them was searching the search bar. And then once I came back on social media, I just never put them back on my things. I'm so used to the search bar. I did it 3 times in 10 minutes trying to get on TikTok. And I looked at Fran. I was like, I'm programmed. I am literally a programmed robot to get onto TikTok. They got me. Hooked.
Yeah, that's a hearty ni hao from the Chinese Communist Party. They have programmed your brain. They have you working for them. I'm lucky because I only did it once. And then I was scrolling through Twitter later in the day and saw like it's back. I was like, that can only mean one thing. TikTok is back on the market. I really thought this was going to be one of those things where it was going to be this big emergency, and then it got cleared up at the last minute. But the fact they actually let it go dark, that was a big step in the. Wow, I can't believe this is happening.
Can you imagine being just like a big TikTok creator and that's all of your business? And
crazy, right?
I mean, I imagine that there's very few like big time creators where TikTok is their only platform. But I imagine there's some where like that platform performs way better than Instagram or whatever. So That would have sucked for them.
I mean, to briefly get very meta, it's like, it is kind of funny that we create all this content for all these platforms and in a moment's notice be like, hey, all the rules are different. You can't make any money on this right now. Like, oh, gosh. Okay. Guess I'll go see what other jobs are out there. We've had a nice little rambling, incoherent sort of stumble into the show, which is right where we want it to be for the Smiley Show.
I'll say this, okay. as you're heading in that direction, a man who does not have TikTok, the guy who won the Amex this week, this is the guy that carries a flip phone, you guys.
This is Sepp Straka, which just before we get to Sepp's win, because there's a lot to unpack here, Birmingham boy, of course. I want to make a public statement for Smiley and I. We were in full yikes mode on one and done. We know we're in a bad place. We got to do something to get out of the we're ice cold. How are we going to fix this, Smiley?
Well, let's just talk a little bit about it in depth. So I would say that, yes, we're ice cold with the guys we're picking, but we're not ice cold in the collective group of guys that we like for the week. It's just unfortunate. We're picking the only guy that seems to play poorly of the group of guys we like. Are we overthinking it? No. I just think it's a bit of bad luck right now because I think five of the top 10 dudes on the odds list heading into this week, like, missed the cut. So you were either on the right guys or you weren't. Unfortunately, I wasn't with Sung JM when he started out 2/4. I was thinking to myself, how, what is this, a glitch? Not Sung JM in the desert. Guy only finishes top 10. So
how about Cam Young finishing 2/3 rounds?
Here's the thing. You said, how good is 40-1 for Cam Young? I said, you know what? You're not the only guy to lock in a Cam Young bet over the years thinking,
this is the week.
This is the week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, shame on you.
Shame on me. I mean, I think there have been a lot of other people that have been, you know, playing that ticket and they were a lot closer than I was. I was probably the furthest away of everyone in the this is Cam Young's week category. If you'd started to notice this trend, you're fading Smiley and I, and you got a little parlay on Sungjae and Cam Young missing the cut, you're a very rich man right now. So congrats to that person, who, wherever they are, if they exist. But yeah, we're aware of it. We got the alarm bells are ringing. We're going to get it right. You just got to just give us some time. We didn't start this till the Mexico Open last year. So just talk to us when we get to Vanata.
Well, why Cam Young this week? I just want to even ask you again, like, why him at a 2600 week?
Because I thought he'd make a ton of birdies and eagles. I mean, I thought he would just take it deep. And I thought
same with Sungjae, I guess. So
both those guys. Right. Well, and I think it's more about you know, that stadium course. I want to get into that one as well because of just some of the changes they've made. And that closing stretch is nervy. 16, 17, 18 at the stadium course. Mm-hmm. I was banking more on the lack of degree of difficulty at La Quinta and the Nicklaus course. But if you have to play the stadium course twice and you got to keep it on the rails coming down the stretch, I probably should have factored that more into my pick. A guy who did keep it on the rails, he went 69 holes without a bogey and then bogeyed 16 and 18, but had four shots to play with. So it was completely fine. Sepp Straka, his third win on the PGA Tour.
I'm so mad, Charlie. You know why? You know why I'm mad?
Tell me why you're mad.
Is because heading into the weekend at Sony, I told everybody in our booth, I was like, Sepp's winning this golf tournament. Then he shot the worst score on the weekend of any of those dudes. And I'm like, he played so good on Thursday, Friday that I wanted to suggest him to people this week because I knew he was in a good place. I knew his ball striking was rock solid. And I was a little concerned about the putter as if, could he keep up with the putting this week? But other than that, I had no hesitations about Sepp playing well in the desert. And it's unfortunate that I got, just this wind of Sepp winning too early. It was too soon, you know, just kind of got on this scent trail like a hound dog. And unfortunately just came up short a week early. It's a shame. I'm so mad.
The expression's usually a day late and a dollar short. You were a day early, but multiple dollars short in the context of our one and done pool and things of that nature. How about Sepp, bald and beautiful, came home early. I mean, this is from a guy who's very self-conscious about, you know, I got a lot of hair here. this area, I'm starting to worry about a little bit. You know, we've discussed hair plugs. Every time I've seen Sepp, he doesn't have the most hair in the world, but I didn't see him as a candidate for just bicking it. And boy, I mean, it worked out for him. There's some mojo there.
Well, why don't we do this? So we're, what is it, 10 minutes into this podcast. Yeah. Why don't we call him at the end of this and FaceTime him? Let's just see if he even has FaceTime on his phone. But let's I know he's got a red eye tonight coming home. But towards the end of the episode, whenever you're ready to wrap, I'll give it a one try on a FaceTime to Sepp, see if we can talk to the champ.
I love that. So then maybe we save additional commentary on Sepp. I mean, you kind of laid it out there. You knew he was playing good, waiting on the putter to come around, and did a lot of things really well this week, including putt it well. How about JT? Very, very close. To me, looking at the stats this week for Justin Thomas, he was positive strokes gained in all four categories, but the number that really popped for me was he gained the most strokes of all those four categories putting, and obviously needed a few more to drop on Sunday, you know, to overtake.
But stats though, Charlie, just to clarify on this, because are they getting the like solid shot link data at La Quinta and Nicholas?
You know, actually a great question. You know what? And I'm looking through it now. You make a great point here because they're only measuring rounds at the stadium course. So I'm glad you noted that. That's a good point. There's grayed out areas for everyone else in the field. So that's a bit of a skewed number. But I guess I would say
Data Golf, this is just Data Golf.
Correct.
So now if you go to PGA Tour and their stats thing, it still gives you relative stats in that department for that day against that group of people, I guess, that you played against.
And are you seeing something that indicates a different type of putting performance for JT?
No, he had a I'll show you what the PGA Tour stats say. And I was actually pulling this up at the time because I was curious about one stat. Putting, he finished 15th, and it shows 15th on Data Golf too. So I'm not sure what the difference would be. The one thing I wanted to check to see was what his driving accuracy was. 57%, which wasn't as high as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a little higher, but I like how he's driving it this year.
Yeah. Do you know how much he's continued to mess around with that 46-inch driver we saw at the Hero? Not at all. I mean, early on he didn't use it.
He didn't use it at Century and looked like his gamer this week, which actually, fun little fact. I always wish that this was published because I think it's always interesting what drivers don't pass the test as far as just going over the limits of what you're allowed to have. And there was a bunch of drivers that didn't pass this week, and JT's was one of them. So he had come up with a new driver like on Tuesday.
What percentage of the field gets their drivers tested at a PGA Tour, man?
Shoot, man. Nobody's ever came up to me on the range and said, hey, man, we got to go test your driver. I'm not sure if it's pulled from the locker room or like my agent's done it. I'm not sure. I don't remember anything like that. I don't know how they test them either.
Right.
That's another thing how do you do it?
Well, because it's got to be robotic, right? It's not like they're just going to go take a TrackMan out and ask you to hit some balls. You just bunt it out there.
I don't. Do you think it's there? There's no way they actually hit with these things like with a robot, right?
I mean,
like I wouldn't.
How do you think? That's a great. We should get somebody on the show who can answer this question for us.
I always thought there was some way to examine the drivers, you know, a way for them to see through, to see how thin or thick the face is, to see how hot it was.
Yeah.
Because the thinner the face, the more the ball would go. So anytime you were about to crack your driver, you were always hitting it as far as that driver would go. And as soon as it cracks, obviously it's done. But that's the new drivers. I always would hit drivers like further the longer I had them, which is probably what a lot of people wouldn't think. They would think their first swings at the driver would be the furthest, but it's actually when that face thins out is what gives a little bit more pop.
That's why, you know, when you go demo a club and the numbers are just juiced because everyone and their mom has smashed that thing on the driving range. It's like, oh, you're gaining 15 yards over your current club. What a shocker. And you get it. Why? Where did that distance go that I had in the demo
club? That's right.
That's funny. Well, that's interesting. I really would actually like to unpack that at some point, because I just assume that you'd have to come up with a piece of tangible data to say this is why it's not passing. Yeah. But I guess measuring face, you know, thickness or thinness would be a reason to. So interesting that his didn't pass.
I'm not meaning to put you on the spot here, mm-hmm. but how much of the golf today did you watch?
I watched a lot of it on my phone. I watched the entire closing stretch, all leaders coming down the last, you know, four or five holes. I watched some of it earlier on E+. And then, you know, as I mentioned to you off camera, wife was working a 12-hour nursing shift today. Totally. Home with the mother-in-law, two kids. So we had a lot of stuff going on.
One of the big storylines from today was the pace of play.
Mm.
It was crazy long. Our off-air time
was 7.
Well,
it was supposed to be 7 and didn't get off air till like 7:30 or 45, right?
7:30, so 30 minutes late. So the PGA Tour always guesstimates how long it's going to take for these groups to play.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like their clock was for a set for about 5 hours. It's threesomes, you got par fives, mm-hmm. the guys are going for.
So still have pro-am groups out there, right?
Like no pro-ams. No pro-ams on Sunday. Just
they cut it. It's a 3-round competition on Saturday.
Just okay, the golfers on Sunday. So that has nothing to do with why it was so slow. So it wasn't even that big of a cut. It was 71. Mm. And I'm wondering I assume they went split tees. They had to have. They went split tees. And so with that being said, 5.5 hours, man, that's crazy. And people were, you know, I think just frustrated by just the waiting times to watching the leaders. You know, these guys are waiting on shots consistently. Every hole, it felt like they were waiting. And when you could feel that on your couch, and it just felt like the day just never got mm-hmm. going, because you just constantly felt like these guys could never get into a playing rhythm because they were just always waiting around for something.
This is deeply ironic because, and I invite somebody out there to fact check me on this, but in these reduced field sizes that are going to place in 2026, they made all these stipulations for size of field, but the one exception that they allowed was tournaments that have multiple courses, or particularly three courses that are being used. So I believe it is the case that the Amex next year would be the exact same field size and composition, exact same cut. And here we are talking about brutal pace of play. And it's just funny to me because I understand
a shot clock doesn't do anything, right? Like when you're backed up with groups, right? Nothing happens there. You're not going anywhere.
You're not going anywhere. And I think it's, you know, I don't know how you fix this one. I think you have to wrap your head. It used to be this way at the AT&T Pro-Am before they changed it to a signature event. You just knew you were signing up for a 5 or 6 hour round. It was, you know, none of the pros you talked to particularly enjoyed this sort of thing, but there was a begrudging sort of acceptance that this is something you do for all the corporate sponsors that help support this tour. And Amex is similar to this in a way.
The Thursday, Friday, Saturday round is what you're talking about.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Correct. And I mean, today being an aberration of sorts without pro-am groups, but just in general, these types of tournaments, really, really long rounds, just you kind of sign up for and expect it. And you know, the why it's a necessary evil of sorts. But I think that it's, for the people out there, and I understand why you want to keep 125 cards. You want to, you know, create more playing opportunities, but when it results in widespread player frustration over pace of play,
yeah,
you really got to look in the mirror and say, okay, it would be nice in a perfect world to have a huge mm-hmm. fields and, you know, unlimited cards. But in a real world, we got to make sure that the playing experience for the guys who have a card is good. And that's why I kind of trend towards liking the changes that are happening in 26.
Yeah, I think that there's always going to be issues when you play courses like this with threesomes. The one thing that I'll add to what could potentially change is, instead of the cut being to 65, cut it to 60.
Mm-hmm.
This has happened before. This is how it used to be, if I recall, for the AT&T Pebble. That field was cut to 60. Now, I think they paid out guys all the way to 70. So if you finish top 70, but more than 60, you were paid MDF. So you got paid 10 to 15 grand that week, but you didn't play Sunday, just so they could get everybody around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting one, and it's obviously not the way you want this type of tournament to end. I'm going to kind of hard turn you here, but in a way, I mean, still talking about something from the Amex, which was the roller coaster week of sorts for Blades Brown. This is, you know, he ended up missing the cut, finishing at 6 under, but I texted the group. I mean, just sort of jokingly early on, he bogeyed his first 3 holes of the tournament. I said, "Welcome to the big show, Blades." And then you responded to that text a day later when he recorded 10 birdies in a row on Friday and moved to a 64.
He didn't have 10 birdies in a row.
Are you sure about that? I thought that was okay. Hold on. No. Wait. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, you're right. It was 7, 8. It was 8 and 9 holes. In the second round of the Nicklaus tournament course. I don't know why I thought it was 10 birdies. That is my mistake. And then shoot 74
still,
on Saturday.
The point is still stands. Ridiculous. It's like he went
pro tournament.
He went low. He went crazy low. And I guess if you haven't been with us, you don't follow the pro game, you wouldn't know who this guy is because he's 17 years old from Tennessee, just turned pro, had plenty of offers to go to high-level college programs, turned them all down, turned down the NIL, said, "I'm going to get my journey started." And so he's only got 7 sponsors exemptions. If he gets 7, we'll see if he gets to that number. I'd imagine that he would. But still, that's a lot to ask for the 17-year-old. And now even more difficult, right, is the special temporary status, how that number changes. Because in the past, right, like it was, you get to that number. Now that number is going to be even more difficult to get to because it's top 100 now. So. Mm-hmm. And we all know special temporary status doesn't mean a thing. So it's a really tough spot to be in. If I were him, I probably would have gone to college for a year and did Q school in the fall. You know, that seems like that would have made more sense to me. I'm not him. He obviously feels like he's ready to go. But that's a lot to ask for, showing up with no status on the Corn Ferry. You know, obviously not on the PGA Tour because he's, you know, still in high school.
Where do you think he goes if these sponsor exemptions on the PGA Tour don't go the way he hopes? I mean, does he try to Monday into Corn Ferry Tour events or PGA Mondays. Tour events? Yeah, just Monday
and,
qualifying.
And those are getting cut down. It was just a risk. I mean, I think he probably got paid pretty well just from a
sponsor standpoint or something. Yeah,
I think so. I mean, it obviously had to look pretty good to him to maybe accept some money from some of these club manufacturer or any other sponsors. But yeah, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, because that to me, it seems like just doing a year going and like even the prevention could have been, "Hey coach, I'm going to come play for a year. But the only thing is I got to be able to do Q school. And if I make it through, I'm leaving in the spring." Now, a lot of coaches will be like, "Hey, I need you here the whole year. Like, I can't have you do Q school and just jet out." And that's understandable. Mm-hmm. A lot of coaches would probably feel the same way and probably have a rule and handle it, you know, to where guys just, you can just come in, play 4 weeks, and then you're just stuck there, you know, leaving a guy off of a team instead of you know, limiting a guy's chances to play.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one, the dynamics involved there in college roster composition as those roster spots get cut down through revenue sharing.
Everything's getting tighter.
So here's what I wanted to actually tee you up for is just looking at, and I believe this is Radar Golf Pro that shared this on Instagram, just a slow-mo of a Blade swinging a driver here.
Oh, look here. You got some film, babe.
Yeah, I just want to just get your impressions on his action. It's kind of a unique move.
No hinge, man.
It's so interesting. It's like, I'm trying to think of
wide.
Is there a little bit of like Bryson in there? Like, you know, just with the, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Very much so.
That stands out to you. Anything else?
It's like Bryson's really old swing.
Yeah.
It's not going to get too far off that golf swing.
That's the benefit of this, just consistency. I think he hits it a long way from what I, you know, I'd have to go again, look at stats. He made one pro start and I don't know where I'd go to get
that swing. To me, doesn't look like, unless he swings it really quickly with club head speed, that doesn't look like a crazy fast swing to me.
It's interesting, right? Well,
wag. That's like opposite of wag. That right arm just like stretches. Like that is a way to keep, you know, keep speed. Your right shoulder stretches at the top of the swing versus your, you know, like when guys get their club gets laid off, right shoulder stops, club weighs off that way because your right shoulder basically stops moving. So I like that.
But I would hate that feel. Like if you told me, hey, hit a little knockdown full iron with that feel, I would miss the ball.
figured it was interesting. I'm glad we got to kind of touch on his process, but also just that swing of a guy that, you know, we're going to be seeing at least 6 more times on tour with those exemptions and trying to kind of make his way full time.
You would think 6 times on tour. Right. Now, it's tough for him. Like the starts that he may get could be opposite field events, and you know with the points how that works. You gotta go out and dang near win that event for it to be worth it for him. I personally, unless you feel like you don't have a chance for the other starts to get to 7, it makes you think about which ones you say yes to.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, you want to find ones. It's the interesting part about it is, like, I think that the way a guy like Luke Clanton, who is in college and playing for his school in the spring and then, you know, getting in the summer part of the schedule on the PGA Tour, there are some softer fields and some events where you can make a big splash, like the John Deere, like the Rocket Mortgage, things like
that.
That's
a good point.
You know, if Blades wants to turn pro from the get-go, you got to get out there and play in some of these events. Not the Amex is the strongest field, but, you know, you're getting into a time of the year where, you know, it's stronger than the John Deere is going to be this year, I should think. So this kind of segues into where I kind of want to wrap for now on Amex, because we had a big DP World Tour event, two friends of the show that we had on this last week playing in that event as well. But just getting your superlatives, I know you weren't on site this week, but we're trying to do this every week just to get a feel for guys who impressed you in all the 4 main strokes gained categories. So just who'd you like this week off the tee?
It was funny that I didn't know you were actually going to ask this, but I was just like scrolling through and the number one dude on the actual ball striking strokes gained tee to green was Harris English. And then I looked at his other stats because I couldn't find the number one guy. So I was like scrolling down and he finished in 43rd. So didn't do very much else very good. Just
ripped it off the tee.
I was thinking, I was like, I could probably come up with some other names in that category, but it would either be Harris. I mean, I thought number two being Patrick Cantlay was pretty interesting. But also, again, this is a weird week. I didn't get to have as many eyeballs as I normally would, as I just kept up with scores the first 3 days and then watched on Sunday. And then we know these stats are a little off on.
Right.
So it's really, this is kind of a tough week, man. Do you want to
skip approach and around the green and putting? You want to throw some names out there, guys you like this week?
I think that Nick Taylor and Sepp are two that stick out with putting. It's good to see that Nick Taylor is hooping again. I thought they both had the rounds, the tournaments, shooting 8 under at the stadium course. I think Nick did it Thursday, Sepp did it on Friday. When you go out on a golf course that was playing over par, when the guys would have their one shot of playing it in the first 3 days and shoot 8 under, that's where you kind of like, that's where you make your bread. That's why Sepp ended up being the winner.
Yeah, without a doubt. Let's hope we can get Sepp on the horn, close this episode out on FaceTime.
Yeah, for sure.
Looking forward to that. Great win for him. Great win for the city of Birmingham, Alabama, and the country of Austria. So shout out to all of you people. Let's head over to not Europe, but the DP World Tour, where the Hero Dubai Desert Classic has a winner. It's Tyrrell Hatton. I believe he tied the record for these, like, sort of, I guess, what is their signature event, their Rolex events all time.
Five, right?
5, I believe. Yeah. Really, I'm looking at him for Bay Hill this year. I just think it's, you know, you just
if, a lot of cops. Hopefully we have enough listeners that have been coming back, and now we've had this bit for a year or so now. How long have we been doing this podcast? Are we coming up on 2 years? Is that right?
Yeah, May 23. Now, this only could have been a bit since like last year when he left right before the AT&T. So this is like a year-long Tyrrell Hatton bit.
Yes.
Yeah, which is the original mention where you got me on this, where I just completely whiffed on it. Yeah, I really like Tyrrell there. It's a bit that I hope never dies. as long as Tyrrell plays on LIV and obviously does not play in the Arnold Palmer Invitational, I hope this bit stays around on the show.
I had you sold, man. You're like, I love Hatton there too. I love that
you
play.
Got me.
It's like, well, it might have to be, it might be tough to get him in the field considering he plays for LIV now, but hard not to like him here.
minor details. He wins this event by a shot, 15 under, destroys a tee marker in the process. He had a classic Tyrrell Hatton quote about this. Just a bit of frustration. Probably shouldn't have done it. Does it make me a bad person? No. It's just a spur of the moment thing, and it happened. I can't go back and change it, so move on. He got fined for it. It's so funny on Tyrrell. It's like we all get upset in the golf course, and you have to understand that to a certain degree. But I think it was Claire Rogers who had a great tweet about this, where she saw the final leaderboard that he won, and it's like, you got to be kidding me. I mm-hmm. thought I saw him destroy a tee marker mm-hmm. and thought he was like DFL. mm-hmm. So now this is a guy that you liked, I believe, to win the Open Championship. And our season preview show,
yeah.
And this is we've talked a lot. And we're actually,
and
about
I feel
to,
even better about it now.
And we're about to launch into a little bit of discussion about LIV, OWGR points, things like that. But this is crucial for a guy like Tyrrell to get this win and get some OWGR points. Just not knowing the future of that league and where they're going to stand.
That's right.
Now with Greg Norman departing and a new CEO coming in, should help LIV's cause there a little bit. But still, it's a relative unknown right now. We've seen guys talk about that and complain about that.
Well, totally. I mean, Tyrrell Hatton has not won a major, so he took on a ton of risk leaving to go play on John Rahm's team at LIV. So when you look at his results, too, I mean, the guy's played some incredible golf over the last 12 months since his departure. He was playing well before that, but you know, to be a top 15 player in the world when you leave and still be in that position without earning any world ranking points in any tour events just shows you know how well this guy has played. It's not a surprise to me. The guy's an incredible ball striker, really good putter, obviously a fiery competitor, very much so like John Rahm. But it's interesting too, heading into this year where, you know, last year was, I think, a pretty much a dud from the LIV guys at the majors besides Bryson. He was the one that carried them all last year outside of John Rahm playing well at the Open. So Hatton could be a guy that steals a major this year. And, you know, it's nice to see the LIV guys playing in DP World Tour events. I am not for one a guy that wants to see these guys just play on LIV. If it's if it's helping the DP World Tour, I'm all for it. It's a way for them to get world ranking points and honestly stop them to just go play there to get your world ranking points. I'm tired of this, the LIV OWGR conversations until their structures changed.
Well, it's a complicated thing, and the despite the fact that this was, you know, there's DP World Tour involvement with this thing via their partnership with the PGA Tour, obviously the guys leaving the PGA Tour were directing most of their barbs that tour. And I think that, like it or not, for the DP World Tour, there are a lot of financial benefits to having these guys fill out your field and be able to sell against that for your TV contracts and things like that. And to kind of naturally segue there, Tyrrell wins the event. John Rahm misses the cut, I believe, at two over. And to
that
get
was
down,
surprising, man. When John Rahm's teeing it up, I don't care where it is. You expect him to play well. Him missing a cut, that to me is not what you normally expect from this guy. He's not a cut misser.
So a guy that could be potentially joining them on Legion 13, I believe, this next year. Two guys a little bit further down the leaderboard than notables, Rory McIlroy, T4 at 12 under, and his protege of sorts, Tom McKibben, T6, 11 under. We talked on this podcast about the emotion these two shared when, at the conclusion of last year's DP World Tour season, Tom McKibben earned one of those 10 PGA Tour cards via the DP World Tour promotion pathway. Mm-hmm. And now there are all these rumors that he is not confirmed or denied that he's leaving to join John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton's team on LIV. Rory was asked about this week, and he gave a long, I think it was like a 3-minute response, but here's a selection of his thoughts on this. And I want to get your kind of reflection on what Rory said. I've known Tom since he was 10 years old, 11 years old. And as soon as he got the offer, he rang me. We had a really good conversation. And I talked to him multiple times over the course of December to get a feel for what he was thinking and obviously what he was going to do. And all I could give is my perspective. I really like Tom as a person, as a player. I think he's got a ton of potential. I said to him, if I were in your shoes, I would make a different choice than the one you're thinking of making. I think working so hard to get your PGA Tour card in the States, something that he did to achieve that goal last year, was a big achievement. I think what he is potentially sacrificing and giving up with access to majors, potential Ryder Cup spot, depending on how he would play, it just wouldn't have been. Look, I don't think anything is official yet, but if I were in his position and I had his potential, which I think I have been before, I wouldn't make that decision. But I'm not him. I'm not in his shoes. He's a grown man at this point and can make his own decisions. All I can do is try to give him my perspective. What's your take on those thoughts, Rory, on Tom McKibben?
Well, I kind of think it from a PGA Tour perspective first when it comes to Tom McKibben and him. We talked a little bit about this last week too, about how there's 10 cards that DP World Tour gets every single year now that filters guys to the PGA Tour. And so Tom McKibben being one of the last guys to get a card, it was kind of a buzzer beater for him. I believe Jordan Smith was the 11th man, last guy out, and so didn't get a card. So my whole thing is, for the PGA Tour and the guys that are trying to chase cards on the DP World Tour, you can't have guys play any PGA Tour events and then take up status. There's got to be some type of a fine that these guys have to where it at least opens up a spot to Jordan Smith, or just, hey, you're either in or you're out. Like, I know these things probably come off a little later, but if you put a tee in the ground on the PGA Tour, that's where you should be, or you should have to pay some form of fines, because you can't just have guys, you know, going to try to win Torrey Pines. And I know it's his right to do so until he technically signs and tees it up at a live event, but there's got to be a penalty that needs to be put in place moving forward to prohibit guys from even thinking about, like Hatton did, play some of the West Coast before going to play the first live event, which I'm looking at the schedule now, February 6th through the 8th. It's the same weekend as Phoenix. So basically Tom McKibben will have the opportunity to go play next week in San Diego. Won't be in Pebble. So basically get one start before going to live, which I think is wrong. I don't think he should play if he's already signed. And yeah, and to your point with Rory, you know, if it was, you know, name your mentor, the guy you looked up to, if it was Graham McDowell for me, I called him about this and he would disagree with it. I most likely at a young age, I would probably go with where that advice would be. You know, this is a guy that Rory's seen it all. I know he's kind of flip-flopped back and forth on some things. You don't really know where exactly he sits on certain aspects of the global tour, but hearing him say that and give him that advice, I thought that was a real true testament of kind of where Rory is right now, which is, hey, if it were me, I wouldn't do it. So that's all you need to know.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if this connects in a way to what you just talked about in terms of live guys playing in DP World Tour events, where I know they've gone through a legal appeal system and, you know, this whole process to get these guys on the tour. And of course, it's good for the DP World Tour in some way, shape, or form. But if I'm the DP World Tour and you just used my program to earn your PGA Tour card, and then you're going to play a couple of events, leave the PGA Tour, go sign with LIV, and then try to come back and play in the DP World Tour as part of the group of guys that can do this.
Yeah, even more.
Maybe that's
so
where you block him. I don't know. You know, to really say, hey, if you're making the decision that's going to forfeit OWGR points, don't come back here trying to use our program that you just, you know, we gave you the opportunity and you turned it down. It's interesting. And I think you're dead on with Rory too. I mean, I just think that, not that Tom McKibben's in the same place that Eugenio Chikara was, but I mean, you're looking around seeing guys who are saying, you know, I thought you're just mortgaging things that should be important to any young professional player. I think that's what Rory's saying. It's like, you have chances to play on, you know, Ryder Cup teams, to get into majors, things like that. Not saying that you completely forfeit that if you go to LIV, because there are ways to do that, but it just makes it so much harder. And for what? I mean, I just can't imagine that.
How much he's getting paid?
How much is getting paid?
I mean, I'm thinking in my head that, let's say he got paid somewhere between $7 to $10 million. Now, you never know what the future holds. You never know if you're gonna have injuries. You never know if you're gonna lose your game. I sure didn't. And looking back, if I was, you know, given a live offer after my rookie year for that much money, I would freaking consider it. I know it's, I think any person would. Now, my feeling on the game of golf, if I would have gone to the live tour and accept that offer, I think it would add an understanding of, like, hey, this, I did this to, you know, change my family's lives, like, for years to come. Now, I dang sure wouldn't be saying I need world recce points over it, whatever. Like, it's the decision I made. I think a lot of these guys have handled it the right way, but others haven't. And it's been kind of surprising to see John Rahm, who was, I thought, of, you know, such a good advocate for the PGA Tour and its interviews for a good year or two, right? Like, when any time he was asked a question about Liv, he was pretty strong on the PGA Tour, and I think at times would touch on, you know, his desire to play on the Ryder Cup teams and support the DP World Tour, and how difficult it was for him to do both. And so I could see in a world now how it's easier for him to do both, but at the same time, like, man, no cuts, closed shop tour, no relegation. Yeah.
He famously pledged his fealty to the PGA Tour at one point in time, John Rahm.
That's right.
It was a very strong and bold quote. Interesting. All interesting stuff. Interesting to hear Rory go in depth on it. To your point, as a guy who has, you know, been on both sides at times of just what it represents, but his advice to a young player right now is don't do this. You know, wait till you're at a point where you have the security, like a John Rahm, like a Rory does, you know, that
we can go. What would you do if you were Tom McKibben? Let me ask you. Well, I just offered you $7-10 million. Like, I just said, as somebody who's played professional golf, I would consider it. You never know what's going
to
happen.
I think you listen to every offer you take. I just don't know, you know.
How good is Tom McKibben?
How good is Tom McKibben, I think, is what it is. You know, it's like if it's Ludwig, you laugh at $10 million. You know, it's like that thing's got to have $100 million on it before I'm even talking to you. You know, but where's the number for Tom McKibben? It's like, is he good enough to make $5 million career earnings lifetime? You know, and I guess the back end of that is, how much do you think you're going to make lifetime, and how much of that would you pay to play in, you know, the Masters a couple times, the U.S. Open a couple times, the Open Championship a few times? You know, like, how much are you worth? Are you willing to give up to do those things? And if it's like there's this huge gap between what your earnings are and what Liv's paying you, and it's like, well, I'd rather just have the $20 million or the $25 million than you go to Liv. Yeah. But if it's like $10 million, how good do you think the people are who are going to invest that money for you? You know, do you think that that's really and truly going to do everything you need to do long term? Like, maybe you feel good about that. I just, that's where we think he is. I don't know if I'd go for that.
You know, he's a young guy. It's 100 cards down the PGA Tour. It's not easy to make the transition to move at a young age to the States, to learn how to play golf on these courses where it's a learning curve every single week. The events he's getting into, bigger fields, harder to make the cuts. It's understandable to think, man, it's going to be tough for me to keep my PGA Tour card, although I do have one. Now, the potential, obviously, is so much higher. If you get off to a good start, like Matthew Bavon, and win in San Diego, now it's like, okay, life's pretty good over here on the PGA Tour. But for a lot of guys, it isn't. You know, it is hard. And so you can understand if a guy's like, you know what, I'd rather still live at home in Ireland and still play maybe some DP World Tour, play 14 events, play some Asian Tour. Is it going to be enough for the majors? Probably not. I'm not sure what his world ranking is now. I probably should, but I don't know. I see both sides of it. I think if you believe in yourself, you go play on the PGA Tour. If you have any doubts and you don't want to move away from home, you want to play a smaller schedule and make a lot of money, hey, it's not a bad option to have. I'll say that.
Yeah, it is. I think that it's easy for me to say where I'm sitting, but I feel like if you are a competitor and you think you can play with the best, you know, you go ahead and take that tour card and you try to go out and prove it. But it
that's
is
the
also,
argument here, right? That's the argument.
I think that's the argument. It's like, it's do you want the security of the money, or do you think you can go out and earn that money and more and make it into majors? And I feel like, you know, that says something about a player's mentality. I'm not trying to knock Tom McKibben right now. I'm just saying that that's at least a lens into his thinking. But, you know, what do I know? I do think the thing coming away from this thing, this is what I think. Because you've played on tour, you know, you've won. Like, I'm sitting here as like an amateur handicapper of you know, pro golf. So it's hard for me to say with, you know, definitive stance, that guy doesn't have competitive drive. He doesn't have what it takes. What I do know is this, because you're sitting here laughing, and I think this is so absurd and so ridiculous. We said this when we had an antitrust expert come on the show. It's like these guys who have played golf their entire life and trained to be good at this sport and then hired people around them to make these decisions are now having to handicap the state of global deal making and whether a government is going to allow a deal to go through, and how much time is that going to take, and how many world ranking points am I going to lose in that period of time. It's just crazy all the factors Tom McKibben has to process to make this decision, instead of just like, do I think I'm good enough to play on this tour and make money here, yes or no. It's it's a wild time for professional golf. So Few other notables I want to hit from that DP World Tour event. Minwoo Lee, little T17, 6 under. Shout out to my guy, the Bay Boy.
That was good to see. You're right. Yeah, it was good to see.
Akshay Bhatia finished T37 at 2 under. I haven't seen a ton of him, if any of him, on the DP World Tour.
I was surprised to see him playing too.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, it just seemed like a weird one, kind of out of nowhere. Obviously, got a sponsor. Or not a sponsor. Well, we got a sponsor exemption, but yeah, some form of payment to be there, which, you know, is great, but still a little bit of a surprise.
I also think it's interesting. I mean, this is a guy that took a very unconventional route, you know, to professional golf and worked his way onto the tour and is now one of the best players in the world. And now he wants to go travel the world and play on a different tour. And I think that's a cool thing. I did think there was a notable, he had a situation where he hit a bad drive and he tried to play up an adjacent fairway, hits a shot, and the rules official comes over and is like, did you just hit it up that fairway?
Like, is it out of bounds?
Like, internal out of bounds. So this is my just every few months I check in about how much I hate internal out of bounds. If there's grass on it, I should be able to go over there and play the golf ball. So
we have technically internal OB of a savior.
Yeah. I mean,
remember eight, did you play them all? I'm trying to remember.
Play all 18? We played all 18, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you can go at 18T, you can go, like, cut the corner left, but you're supposed to go straight.
That's a real shame. Hate internal OB. There's also a thing where you're not supposed to hit it over a school when the kids are in session. That's right.
Well, unfortunately, that ball just happens to go that way. But yeah, when the school's in session, you got to go left.
Great par four. Can't try to drive it if the school kids are out in the yard. So note to self, if you ever play at Vestavia. And then two friends of the show. Elvis Smiley, T58, finished one over, but had a rough start. Danger of missing the cut. Shoot 68 on Friday to make the cut and finish where he did.
Let's go, Elvis.
And how about David Ford? Did not finish the way he wanted to. I believe he finished with an 82 on Sunday, but was tied for the lead after Thursday with a 65. That's got to be worth. He's currently atop the PGA Tour U rankings. A made cut. The PGA Tour U proper rankings are much different than the simplicity of the PGA Tour U accelerated rankings.
Right.
So I don't, you know, plan. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know, but I assume.
It's got to mean something.
That's got to mean something. So shout out to David Ford, both guys on the show this week. Good to see the smiley bump helping in a small way. Mm-hmm. So that's a little wrap on the DP World Tour. Now we got to get to the Sicko Gear Tinkerer Report. And here's a place I want to start. It's my own little bag here, because I've been texting you about this thing. The new Srixon ZXi Utility 2-iron. This thing is an absolute rocket. It's got the Hideki creamsicle shaft, the graphite design. Absolutely love this thing. Got here late yesterday and I raced to the range to hit a few balls because it's going to be in the teens this week.
The weather's going to be so brutal. Cold this week. It's
brutal. But shout out Quinn Joseph and the good people at Srixon, because I'm trying to hit rockets off the tee like Smiley. And I say that to segue into where I'm going to start, because this was a Smiley Sicko Gear Tinker report this week from the Amex. Sepp Straka, the winner of the event, had some new ZXi irons in the bag and playing a new ball, the Z-Star XV. So, Smiley, here's my question to you is, how do I get my hands on these irons?
That's a great question, man.
I assume they're in your bag already. If Seth's playing them.
They're really good. They're in my bag. I'm going to the PGA show this week. So, if any of you folks that listen to the show are going to be there, I'll be around. I'll be with folks over at Polo. I'll be at Srixon, Swag, hanging out. So, probably run into a lot of people. You kind of run into everybody at that week.
But look, little combo iron set for Sepp. You said that 5-iron in particular can launch that thing high, get it to stop.
Yeah, it's the conversation is just about combo sets, and
you know, I think a lot of people think about irons and that when you buy one set that you should stay in that whole set. And I think what I've seen is that a lot of tour players, first off, like there's some unique bags like Sahith, I won't even go there, but a lot of players have two four irons they'll travel with. It's like one's like a, you know, more of a cavity. So like in this case, it's the ZX,
he carries a ZXI 5 4 iron and 5 iron,
right.
ZXI 7 6 iron through 9 iron.
Anyways, the more cavity one, just like what's supposed to happen, helps miss hits, which makes sense. Typically would be a little bit more on the hotter side, so just that a little bit extra cavity, so you'll actually maybe get a yard or two more out of those clubs. But for whatever reason, the 5 iron with cavity, it just goes to the moon. It's just like whoosh, and it just goes straight up. And you don't have to help it up quite as much into those par threes or hitting into par fives. So it becomes, you know, like if it's one shot a tournament that you're able to just swing normal and not have to worry about getting it up in the air. A lot of times my missed shots come from trying to help the ball up. And I think that happens with a lot of amateurs. So if you're able to get clubs that really help you get the ball up in the air, why fight it? You know, I think I'm probably trending that way with the 5 iron. I haven't quite done it yet. I've got it with the 4, done it with the 3. I used to get crap all the time in college. I carried 2 4 irons and my boys just havoc.
Savage.
These guys were just crushing me.
Well, I just find it so interesting that we're, you know, so many years, the assumption is that everyone on tour played a blade or a muscle back, you know, and then now we're in the day and age where not only does Sep have cavity back irons, he's got even more forgiving cavities at the top of his bag, and he's out there winning tour events. So it's like, if you're out there and you're an amateur player and you're about to embark on a vanity project with blades, don't do it. That's not, there's nothing to be gained there. So that wanted to hit that in the Sicko Gear Tinker Report. Also, Cobra. We talked about Cobra's driver. Max Homa's got the one with 5 zillion settings on it. They've built a new mini driver /2 wood. Got some images of that floating around.
Ricky played good this week, didn't he?
Ricky played good. I think he struggled a little bit on Sunday, but he was in the mix. He was in the mix for sure.
He shot 1 under today. Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. Just I'll say this. I was, again, a little bit diversion of attention.
He was close to top 10 there for a while.
Every time I checked in, like he had opportunities to go low and just missed a few putts. I think that he would have liked to have bad back, but in the mix. So yeah, he's a Cobra guy. Max Homa, of course, Cobra guy. And then this one, just straight shot of nostalgia here, because one of my most vivid childhood golf memories, like everyone and their brother wanted an oil can Vokey wedge. And they've now, their Titleist is releasing, you know, via Vokey, a limited edition SM10 oil can version of that wedge, which is so sick.
You're such a gearhead, man. Like all the stuff you're saying right now is just like in one ear, out the other. Like you're so into the gear stuff, and I love that. And a lot of times, like when I was playing on tour, I didn't even know like what the brand was of like what it was called. And you go and ask a lot of tour players, a lot of guys are like, wait, I don't even know what it's called. And every amateur person that loves the game of golf, they're like, what's your irons? Like, what are they called? Oh, I got some of those too. I actually just got the new one. Just the difference between like pro talking about their gear versus like high quality amateurs talking about, I think I'm gonna go get this club, and just like it just shows up to you on the range where it's like, oh, I kind of like that.
Yeah
I'll put it in. It's so nonchalant on the tour with changing equipment, and well, I say nonchalant, these guys they put time into it, but
sure. Well, I think you care about a different set of specs and numbers, as you care about, like, you know, what's your spin rate, and you what's your launch angle, and
what's the window? Are we
like
the
those are the things you're like, you could put any club in my hand, if it goes in the window I want it to go and it spins the way I want it to spin,
and does it look sick,
that's going in my bag. I think as amateurs, there's like, and to be clear here, I'm like the guy that like just got into wine or just got into coffee, and I'm like very much amateur. You can go on some of these forums and the depth that you get of people talking about these things, I'm like, I have no clue about any of this, like, you know, torque and all this stuff. I'm like, okay, too far for me. I just remember as a child getting a wedge out of my granddad's closet that had a little oil can stamp on it and bringing it back home to Fresno, and all the kids are like, sick. And this is hitting me right in the nostalgia feel. So that's the wrap this week for the Sicko Gear Tinker Report.
Good news, bad news.
Okay, hit me.
Good news is I am right about Sep having a flip phone. Bad news is you can't FaceTime him. I just looked.
That's understandable and exceptional. So Sep, wish we could have had you on. Congrats on the win.
Yeah,
I'm sure he'll be on soon.
Well, we had him. Let's see, we had him on at the BMW where we did our Swifties. He's a Swifty guy. Likes old school Swifty.
So. Can I right or wrong here at this point in the show? Because I completely whiffed. I got seized by the moment in our Swift rankings. I never got to put out my Swift power rankings, and it's my medal podium. And so I would go, if I was going to put on my Taylor Swift medal podium, bronze medal would be Down Bad. Silver would be Invisible String, and gold would be Wildest Dreams. I just wanted to I need to get those out there because I felt like I missed
Down
a moment.
Bad, huh?
It's a new one. It's a great song. It's a great song.
I like your other two.
Invisible String's great. You know,
I still feel like you gotta have some throwbacks in there.
That's fine. You know, there's a little bit of Swift for everybody. Those are just mine. You know, that's how it goes.
And that's talking T Swift.
And that's been talking Taylor Swift. Thank you for joining us for that segment.
Oh, Tutty. As we see, oh my God.
Oh, I'm on a
Lamar
delay.
Just threw a Tutty. Just to get it. Now they got to go for 2 minutes and a half left in this game. Are you watching?
How much time do you have in this pocket? Wow. Oh, we got ourselves a ball game. Minute 30
Holy
left in this,
mackerel,
in this game.
And a half.
This is all good.
Right. It's a good time to sign off, right?
Well, we could. Yeah, you know what? I had a few extra items. I had some TGL ratings talk that we can get to down the road. And I had a tweet from Shane Bacon that Brandon Matthews was playing the 18th hole Seminole downwind and made a hole in one on the closing par four.
That's sick.
Sick. So sick.
That's a heck of a line you got
to
take.
Heck of a line. I think I responded back to you, sent this to me. I said, yeah, I almost did that last time I played there, except I pull hooked it on the walking path next to the sea grapes and made a sick bogey from there. So yeah, that is the show.
Oh, he dropped it.
Oh, I'm on the worst delay of all time. So this ball game.
Are you kidding me,
Bills
dude?
Can get it
is
back.
That Mark Andrews?
Wow.
What are you doing?
Dude, you got to be kidding me. Snow. He got snowed.
I mean, Lamar kind of like short-armed it, but
that's
oh
tough.
My gosh. Oh no, that's missing a two. That's missing a two-footer for the win, buddy. Right?
That is tough. That's really, really tough. Let's see here. Yeah, that's
he's
red,
had
red
kind
basket.
Of a bad year too, right?
A little injured, I think. A little injured. He's one of the elite tight ends, and I looked think
like
he's got a little
it looked
up.
Like he lost his footing.
Yeah,
a bit. But no excuse, man.
No excuse. Balls rock hard, snowy, but no excuse.
How many timeouts? They got one timeout, one first down, it's game's over.
Got to give them a stop. And that's been reacting on a belated timeline to the AFC divisional playoff game. Thank you for joining us for that segment as well.
Crap.
Well, there you go.
Oh, my God.
I feel like that's a pretty good way to conclude the show.
Okay.
Peter out.
The only thing I'll leave you with.
Final thoughts?
Yeah. The only thing I'll leave you with is. So Colton Nose is coming on the podcast Wednesday.
Yes.
I already recorded with him.
Awesome interview.
Great convo. I think a lot of people will like it. And the most interesting part of the convo, there's plenty that you might like, but one I've been thinking about a bit is the TGL and how it translates to guys' performance playing on tour. And if the simulator is going to be off like it was in week two, especially with certain shots with wedges, guys are just like, I thought, you know, ball's not curving. Colton and I talked about it a bit. I think that's going to an interesting discussion to listen to him and I kind of getting it a little bit more into the weeds with it. But still, I think it's something to monitor because the more times these guys are going to play on the simulator and getting weird results, hopefully they can kind of shore that up in week three.
Yeah, that was a little strange for something that we both enjoyed greatly week one. And just on the ratings front, it was a 9% bump in ratings, both for the, I think the overall audience, just over 1 million. And then I think it was close to 4 million unique viewers for that week two broadcast featuring Tiger. Again, another blowout. The highlight of that being Kevin Kisner blading a bunker shot at the flagstick, which was so hilarious.
Yeah.
I still think a ton of entertainment value, but I agree with you completely. It's like, I know they have a partner that's put up a lot of money and time and effort in dialing this thing in. But those guys can only kind of protect that for so long before you got to say, hey, man, like this is we're playing a different type of golf here. Yep. I think they're helped by the fact that they've leaned into the silliness of it and the silliness of triples and all that stuff. And that's my favorite part about it. So here's to hoping that they can dial that in for week three and beyond, because we both greatly enjoyed the first few. And listen to that segment of the Colton Oast interview, the rest of which was amazing. Fun being a fly on the wall for that, listening to you two hang. So that's coming on Wednesday. And then, of course, the Farmers Insurance Open. It's an open, right? Do I have that right? Yeah, Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines.
It's not the Farmers anymore, is it? Where is it?
Is it? Oh, my gosh. Did I do this wrong?
Is it the last year of the Farmers?
I think it's the last year of the Farmers. Okay. I think it's the last year. Wow, I got super scared there for a second.
No, you're good. It felt right.
Yeah, felt right. We're going with it. It's at Torrey Pines, U.S. Open venue, so it should be a good watch this week. So look forward to Colt on Wednesday and then our recap of that tournament coming on Monday morning. So looking forward to all of it. Thanks so much for listening and watching. Enjoy the rest of the football. We'll talk to you soon.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first time fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the...
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.